What the hell was that?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah. Are you there?
We gotta get rid of this kook. I got an idea.
Greatness at its finest.
Welcome to the Rodcast.
Wonder who that could be.
On the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260.
Come on, why you want to play a brother like that?
And hornfm.com.
Is there a problem back there?
Where the Longhorns play and Austin talks sports.
Welcome back to the Rodcast, Monday Funday edition of the Rodcast, Super Bowl Monday Funday edition. You can always be a part of the show. Hit us up on the Specs text line, 512-337-3776. You can hit me up via Twitter at Rod Bayris, my man Ray. Back there represents at Ray from the 361. Congratulations to the Eagles fans out there on the Eagles' first Super Bowl victory. They beat the Patriots last night in the Super Bowl 52-41-33. I think the most interesting and intriguing part post Super Bowl party reports have been that two people in Philadelphia, based on a police scanner report, stole a police horse and are riding through the city, highly intoxicated. Apparently, they stole a police horse. And they're not just riding, they were just riding through the city. That obviously that was after the Super Bowl. I'm sure that they've been apprehended and I'm sure they've been thrown in jail. Maybe, we don't know. But that's how crazy the city of Philadelphia went after they won the Super Bowl, that there's actually a documented report of a couple. It was two people. It was actually a couple that stole a police horse and then went through the city just kind of riding it, having fun.
Is the city of Philadelphia still standing today?
Dude,
I haven't really.
Oh, I know. I saw a Prius that had been overturned.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry.
I saw some cars on fire, man. Yeah. I saw a lot of crazy
Prius
things going
overturned.
On. Somebody was riding an ostrich, I heard.
I saw there was one video of a guy who was half naked, standing on top of a car, just riding through the city.
Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that was one of a naked woman. She voluntarily was naken. I believe she had taken her own clothes off and she was hanging out having a good time. Yeah, man, it's crazy. There's one report, a police horse that had been stolen. An off-duty cop reportedly had been arrested because he got involved in the celebration. The cop who actually got too invested with the fans. There was looting at Macy's, unfortunately. And apparently they went further than just climbing light poles. Of course, they always climb light poles. They do that just on a Philadelphia win during the regular season. But now the new thing was they would climb the light poles, and also they were climbing traffic poles and traffic lights. So they were like taking down traffic lights, destroying traffic lights or shaking them down until they break. I have no idea. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know about that type of looting or that level of looting. The Ritz-Carlton awning collapsed because people were jumping off the awning onto the street trying to crowd surf. The awning did collapse. The Rocky statue is still up, though. The Rocky statue is still upright. There you go. So they did show respect to the Rocky statue. And yes, you are right. Apparently, a stolen ostrich was also part of the report. Someone stole an ostrich, and they had let it loose, or they were riding it through the city as well. Yeah. Cars flipped over. And this also, this was on video. I saw it at Barstool. There was a Philadelphia Eagles fan. Based on a bet or based on something, we don't know, he ate some horse poop. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is documented.
I heard about that, man.
You just got to go type it into Twitter. Just go type in. I'm sure you can type in guy who ate horse poop or Google it, whatever, and you can see it. I would encourage you to not do that, but you can go do that too. You can go see the guy who ate the horse poop because he was either that excited or he lost a bet. You know what I mean? And kudos to him if he lost the bet. I would welch on that bet. I don't welch on bets very often, but the horse poop bet, I'm sorry. All right, I'll pay you whatever. I'm not following through on that one.
But, yeah, I don't know about as far as going to eat horse poop, but I did expect a lot of this to happen in Philadelphia if they did win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
There's just a crazy, crazy fan base over there, man, and they've been waiting for this.
They try to lube up all the poles. I know that sounds like some derogatory joke. It's not. That is true. They lube up all the poles in Philadelphia with Crisco oil. like Crisco like oil before like a big win or something, because they know people are going to try to climb the poles. So they put Crisco all on them so they'll slip down the poles and they can't climb them. They still climb them, obviously. And they just destroy everything. So we hope the city of Philadelphia is okay. They're riding in joy, which is, I learned about that when I was in, like, Detroit. People would do riot in joy often, you know what I mean? Like, they win a big game and they will burn couches and riot. Yeah. That's better than rioting because of anger and frustration, I guess so, man.
I feel like rioting, period,
is bad.
I feel like the damage is the same.
Rioting, period, is a bad thing. You shouldn't be looting stuff. And so that's just bad, period. But I guess doing it in joy is better than doing it in frustration and anger. You know what I mean? But either way, it's terrible. It's bad. People shouldn't be doing it. But, yeah, that's how Philadelphia Eagles fans are just insufferable. They are heathens. They are. Congratulations to them, but they are the worst of the worst fans.
Yeah, maybe this would calm them down a little bit. They won't be so angry anymore.
Maybe. It would. You would think a Super Bowl victory would do that. But those are just some of the reports that have circulated about how the the festivities, the post-Super Bowl party festivities went for Eagles fans. All right, let's give you real quick the headlines, and then we'll get to some of the other storylines from Super Bowl 52.
These are the top headlines of the day. It's time for the Rundown.
All right, the Rundown, as always, brought to you by our good friends at Top Gun Lawn and Equipment Rentals, topgun.net. That's with two N's, is where you find out more about Top Gun Lawn and Equipment Rentals. Topgun.net is where you find out more about Top Gun Lawn and Equipment Rentals. All right, Super Bowl 52 in the books, a 41-33 win for the Philadelphia Eagles. They did it in dramatic fashion. Hail Mary for Tom Brady at the end of the game falls short. And the Philadelphia Eagles get their first Super Bowl victory. Nick Foles is the Super Bowl MVP. A lot of folks here in the heart of Texas, here in Austin, really excited about that. The Westlake product had an awesome game. He had a receiving touchdown, three touchdowns passing, one interception on 28 of 43, and 106 passer rating when it was all said and done for the Philadelphia Eagles. Tom Brady also an amazing game. It really did. Like, Tom Brady played fantastic. He really played great. And it still wasn't – that's how high the standard is for Tom Brady. It still wasn't up to the GOAT status that we've become accustomed. But he was 28 of 48, 505 yards passing, three touchdowns, zero picks, 115 passer rating, averaging 10.5 yards per attempt. It didn't matter. The Patriots still come up short in the game. They did not punt once in the game and yet still lost that game. It was the most yards combined for any matchup, any game in NFL history between the Philadelphia Eagles and the Patriots. Not just in Super Bowl history, but in NFL history in any game. So it was a great Super Bowl. I think it lived up to what we thought it was going to be. But congrats to Doug Peterson. Congrats to Nick Foles. Congrats to the Eagles fans for a thrilling Super Bowl. Great drama, but the Patriots come up short.
Yeah, so along with Super Bowl Sunday, we do have Selection Saturday, and the Hall of Fame class of 2018 has been selected for the NFL. So Bobby Bethard, linebacker Robert Brazil, safety Brian Dawkins, guard Jerry Kramer, linebacker Ray Lewis, and wide receivers Randy Moss and Terrell Owens, and also Brian Urlacher have all been selected to be in 2018's Hall of Fame class. The ceremony will take place in Canton on August 4th, where they get their gold jackets. But as far as the selection in the class, I love that the receivers got to go in. Randy Moss, as Rod mentioned earlier, a first ballot Hall of Famer, the first time a wide receiver has done so since Jerry Rice. And T.O. and Ray Lewis, who a lot of people were actually thinking or a little bit critical of them joining the Hall of Fame. They actually were able to get in, so it's good for them.
Yeah, I knew Ray Lewis would get in, and I knew T.O. would get in, too. You can't deny T.O. His stats are unbelievable, but he's not a crowd favorite, not a media favorite. Randy Moss was a no-brainer. One of two players to eclipse 1,000 yards receiving 10 times. Jerry Rice is the other. He did it 14 times. Brian Urlacher, I think he's just kind of – I mean, he was all-pro 5 times. So Brian Urlacher kind of changed the game while he was in it. Voted to 8 Pro Bowls. Named on the all-decade team of the 2000s. And the Bears' all-time leading tackler. That says a lot right there. Ray Lewis. Ray Lewis, one of those guys, you know, his stats are fantastic, but he's in the Hall of Fame and the Hall of Infamy. I think he's as famous as he is infamous. And even though he's a controversial figure going in, I think that helps him because it is a Hall of Fame. And sometimes your infamy, it even helps with that. The folklore of Ray Lewis is a real thing, the folklore and legend. And now he's involved in broadcasting. That helps, too. Brian Dawkins. Maybe the only one I think you can really dispute out of this group. But he is the only player in NFL history to record a sack, an interception, and a fumble recovery, and a touchdown catch in the same game. But I think he's the one you can dispute. The old school guys, Jerry Kramer, that's a no-brainer. He was a part of 6 NFL championship teams. He was his 45th year of eligibility. So I'm sure that's a no-brainer for a lot of old school guys. And Robert Brazil, who is the doomsday, Dr. Doom, if you will, drafted 6th overall by the Oilers in 1975. The only player drafted higher out of Jackson State in the Common Era was Walter Payton, who went 2 picks earlier in that same draft, and Bobby Beathard. He was searched to scout for the Chiefs, the Falcons, director of player personnel for the Dolphins. He was also with the Chargers for a while as their GM, and also Washington's GM. So you're talking about a guy that's been around the NFL for a long, long time, or at least he was around the league for a long, long time. And his teams, I think, went to combine 7 Super Bowls and won 4 during his time. So that's part of those old school guys. I think overall it's a really, really good class. Like, I like that class. And I know the wide receivers haven't gotten a lot of love lately, but this wide receiver class will probably go down as one of the greatest in the history of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. All right, NBA action tonight. Dallas Mavs at the LA Clippers tonight. And the NBA teams here in the state of Texas, they ramp up again tomorrow, I believe. But the big story over the weekend, the Rockets playing the Cleveland Cavaliers in Cleveland, put an Old Testament-style butt-whipping on Cleveland. And Cleveland in the primetime, I think LeBron James said he would rather not play primetime games. He'd rather not play on national television because he said every time they play on national television, they get beat really badly. And they really do. They get beat like they stole something every time they play in a nationally syndicated game or a primetime game. So something's going on with the Cavs. It's getting worse. We thought there's no way it can get worse. They're going to get better. They have not had that that resurgence that we've expected. Right? It ain't happening.
No, I'm surprised they haven't fired Tyronn Lue yet.
That's a great point. Usually they would just fire the coach.
Yeah.
But that maybe they have nobody else, though.
Yeah, and I couldn't see who else they'd have. LeBron would be a player coach.
That would be great.
That would be right. In Cleveland, that's the only place he could do that. That's the only place he could get away with that.
But right now, everybody would have – any coach they bring in would have to have the LeBron James stamp of approval.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody else has that right now.
No, definitely not. Yeah. I don't see that out there.
Yeah.
So some little bit of hockey action tonight. The Dallas Stars will look to extend their win streak to 3 games as they take on the New York Rangers tonight in the American Airlines Center in Dallas.
All right, that's the rundown brought to you by good friends at Top Gun Lawn and Equipment Rentals, topgun.net. That's with 2 N's is where you find out more about Top Gun Lawn and Equipment Rentals. All right, let's talk about the Super Bowl MVP, Nick Foles. From here, right here in the great state of Texas, a Westlake product. He is the Super Bowl MVP and one of the greatest stories in the history of the NFL. It really is. I mean, this is a guy that 2 years ago admits that he thought about retirement and he wants to become a pastor after he's done playing football. So he's taking seminary classes or online from like Liberty University. that's true because he was thinking about life after football a few years ago. And signs with the Philadelphia Eagles this past year and now is the Super Bowl MVP. And I wonder if, and you know, he had that 2013 season, which we've talked about, 27 touchdowns. The three interceptions, the passer rating, I think, is third all-time highest in a season in NFL history. It was the best touchdown interception ratio at the time in NFL history. I mean, it was an all-time great season, period. But a lot of people viewed it as an aberration and not necessarily consistent with, like, Nick Foles' development as a quarterback. And, you know, it gets you to thinking about the development of quarterbacks. And I know a lot of, you know, Westlake folks have a lot of pride right now because you do have two quarterbacks from Westlake that have won a Super Bowl. And people are like, man, that's never happened before. It actually has happened before because Peyton Manning and Eli Manning went to the same high school. So it's unfortunate that it has happened before, but we're in a weird way. It's happened. Two guys from the same high school have won a Super Bowl and won Super Bowl MVP, too. But getting back to Nick Foles, just his path to get to where he is right now is such an obtuse path. Like, you just don't see quarterbacks that have that type of, you know, path. Like, it's like Kurt Warner's story, or, you know what I mean, like those types of stories where you never would predict that he's going to end up being the Super Bowl MVP. But I do wonder if teams are starting to look at Nick Foles' story or Case Keenum's story. Case Keenum's very similar. Like, you know, his map is all over the place that led him to the Minnesota Vikings and having one of the best seasons that we've ever seen for a young quarterback, definitely the best season in his career. And whether that's an aberration. And, you know, you start looking at, you know, the model of, you know, play a quarterback when, you know, when you first get him, just play that guy right away, or to let that guy sit and develop. Because Nick Foles, obviously, you know, needed more time to develop as a quarterback. And now we're seeing the best of Nick Foles. And we saw flashes of that. And I think 2013 was a huge sample size of that, of what the ceiling for Nick Foles could be. And people were really, really excited about it, and he should have been. But, you know, with a little more growth and a new system and a quarterback-friendly system and Doug Peterson, now, you know, Nick Foles is in a different discussion. People are considering him as a franchise quarterback. You know what I mean? A guy that you can build a franchise around. And, yeah, why not have, you know what I mean, why not have that type of, you know, projection for him when he's a Super Bowl MVP? And, you know, so now I think people are starting to rethink the science behind picking a quarterback, and they should, because, you know, it shouldn't even be a science. It's more of an art than a science. They call it an inexact science. It's more of an art than a science, because science would, you know, that would insinuate there's a method to it. There's a, you know, the scientific method. You know, I mean, that there is some type of structure to it and a step-by-step process to it. You know, I mean, that's been proven, you know, I mean, time and time again, and you can replicate it. You can't. Like, there is no science to quarterback. It's truly an art where it manifests itself in different ways, in different forms. You know, sometimes it could be in Nick Foles' story. The other times it could be in Tom Brady's story. You just never know the way it's going to kind of manifest itself. So I think the more and more you get away from the, you know, the science of trying to pick a quarterback, I think you'll get an NFL that is, I would say that they're a little bit more progressive about the quarterback position. Like, and I think that's what you're starting to realize, even with Nick Foles' story. Like, just, you know, it doesn't always work out the way you think it's going to work out. It's not always the prototype you think it's going to be. Everybody's different. Some guys you can sit and it benefits them. Some guys have to play right away and that benefits them. You know, Nick Foles, he didn't play right away. I think he sat for a while, didn't play till like week 11 of 2012, then 2013. He sits for the first, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks of the season. So he sat for a while, and I think it benefited him. You know, Case Keenum, I think the same thing. I think those guys, you know, people would have given up on them in a less progressive NFL. And now it's like, no, that guy, you know, he can play. Like, you can still keep giving guys like that a chance. And that's why Nick Foles started thinking about his post-playing career and started looking into seminary school, because he knows the way the quarterback circle of life is. But In an NFL where I want to say they're star for quarterback play, but quarterback is still a rarity, and someone who can play at a high level is still rare. You've seen the ceiling for a guy like Nick Foles, and now they're seeing the ceiling for the guy like Case Keenum. And those guys, I do wonder if, you know, them sitting and being able to have time to mature and develop and not having a lot of pressure, if it has, you know, brought out the best in them. But that's an individual circumstance. You know, Kirk Cousins sat for a while. Jimmy Garoppolo, all the, you know, Brady sat for a while. Drew Brees sat behind Doug Flutie. I wonder if there will be a shift in the pendulum back to developing more quarterbacks. Patrick Mahomes is going to take over Kansas City, sat for a year. You know, Mitch Trubisky played right away this year, and Deshaun Watson played right away, and he's going to get a chance to sit because of his injury for most of the season. But I do wonder if people are going to go back to developing young quarterbacks because they're starting to see the benefits, or if that guy had the intangibles, had the immeasurables, you know, it's going to take them time to adapt to the game. But I think it's always been different, right? I mean, back in the day, guys like, you know, Terry Bradshaw and Roger Staubach and Joe Montana and Brett Favre and, you know, all the Warren Moon, they sit and develop. And then we started, you know, throwing other guys out there, you know, Dan Marino and Troy Aikman and Peyton Manning, Cam Newton and Russell Wilson. Those guys played right away and they were fine. I don't think there is a true rhyme or reason or a exact science to it. I think every situation is different. Every team is different. So, the circumstances, they vary. But for a guy like Nick Foles, in the situation that he wound up in, to play at that level, I just wonder what the future is for him, because he's not going to be the starting quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles. It's not going to happen. Carson Wentz is the franchise quarterback going forward. And for Philadelphia, I wonder if they can use this to springboard them into a, you know, kind of a, you know, really a situation where they can maximize the value of Nick Foles. You know, they can get a first-round pick for him, or, you know, multiple mid-round picks for a guy like Nick Foles, and then even further distance themselves from the rest of the league and be even deeper. And that's what you got to think about, too. Like, Philadelphia could use that. And that's where the investment by them to invest $7 million in Nick Foles and to waste $5 million on Chase Daniel, it's going to pay off for them, because they're going to be able to trade Nick Foles somewhere. They may keep him as an insurance policy, but I doubt it. They got him under contract for one more year. My best guess is they trade him to one of these quarterback-thirsty teams, these quarterback-hungry teams out there, and they may end up getting a first-round, second-round pick for him. How many teams out there need a quarterback? Now, this is a very quarterback-heavy draft. You got like six quarterbacks you can take in this draft. You got Darnold. You got Rosen, you got Lamar Jackson, you got Baker Mayfield, you got Josh Allen, you got Mason Rudolph. You got a ton of quarterbacks to choose from, all potential first-rounders. But Cleveland needs a quarterback. Giants need a quarterback. Denver needs a quarterback. The Jets, the Cardinals, the Chargers, Bills, Steelers, Jacksonville, Minnesota. All of Minnesota's quarterbacks will be free agents. Teddy Bridgewater, Case Keenum is a free agent. Sam Bradford, all free agents. Jacksonville, I know they made it to the AFC title game, but nobody trusts Blake Bortles. They got him for one more year, but if I'm Jacksonville, I'm going after a quarterback too. And Nick Foles has already proven himself, Super Bowl MVP. He's got one of the best seasons on record in the history of the NFL in 2013. I mean, what else does he need to prove? That he can be a franchise quarterback, at least on that level. You know, Kirk Cousins is in this similar conversation. They have a question mark, franchise quarterback. Like, can they become a franchise quarterback? And I think right now, Nick Foles has got to be in that conversation. I think people are probably on the phone with Philadelphia right now. I don't know what teams, but out of those 8 to 10 teams I mentioned, I guarantee a couple of them are on the phone with Philadelphia right now asking about Nick Foles. And because of Carson Wentz's uncertainty, they may decide to keep him as an insurance policy. It's the reason they won the Super Bowl this year. It's because they decided to keep Nick Foles as an insurance policy. But the future is bright for him, because he has on separate occasions proven with different coaches, and not necessarily different coaching styles conceptually, but different coaches, different regimes, that he can hit a certain ceiling, and his ceiling is a ceiling of a franchise quarterback. Like, that's Nick Foles. That's the story right now with Nick Foles. All right, so we'll come back. We'll talk more about the Super Bowl, the storyline surrounding the Super Bowl. We'll also get into some discussion about the halftime show with Justin Timberlake and the commercials. Our thoughts, our review of the Super Bowl commercials this year. All that and more when we return. This is the broadcast right here on The Horn, 104.9 and AM 1260. Got the game by the throat. Okay, you popped up on me by surprise. Yeah. See, I never took you for the popping type. Damn, it's 4 a.m., so please believe the hype. Hit the lights, yeah. I'm way over top. Pop it, flick it. Drop a pin, send a location. All right, welcome back to the broadcast. You can always hit us up on the Spec Sex Line, 512-337-3776. You also can hit us up via Twitter. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. My man Ray is at Ray from the 361. Another lesson that I think we learned from the Super Bowl is you have to be willing to acquire talent by any means necessary. The Philadelphia Eagles, whether it be in free agency or through the draft or trade, they made a ton of moves this past season and in the offseason. In free agency, they signed Torrey Smith. They signed Patrick Robinson. They signed Nick Foles. Of course, they signed LeGarrette Blount, Kenyon Barner, Alshon Jeffery, Chance Warmack, all in the last year or 2 years. I mean, they made a ton of moves in the offseason. And if you look at the trades they made, they traded for Ronald Darby, starting cornerback. They traded for Jay Ajayi. They traded for Timmy Jernigan. They made a ton of moves via trades. And they traded Sam Bradford 2 years ago for a first-round pick and a fourth-round pick. That fourth-round pick that they acquired, they traded that for Jay Ajayi. That first-round pick they acquired for the Sam Bradford trade, they picked up Derek Barnett, who ended up recovering the fumble on the strip sack against Brady to seal the game in the drive before the Hail Mary for Philadelphia. They ended up giving him an 8-point lead in the game. And he had 5 sacks and 2 fumble recoveries, 3 fumble recoveries now, and 1 forced fumble in that game. So they, whether it be free agency, they signed a ton of free agents. A lot of those guys end up starting for him. Alshon Jeffery, LeGarrette Blount ends up being the leading rusher, Chance Warback, Nick Foles. And in trades, they traded for a ton of guys, true. Traded for Jay Ajayi, traded for Ronald Darby, traded for Jernigan. And, of course, in the draft, which, you know, I know the Cowboys lean heavily on the draft, and everybody should lean heavily on the draft. But you can't lean too heavily on it. You have to use whatever means possible to acquire talent, to expand the talent pool for your organization. And that's what and the Patriots are famous for doing that, too. The Patriots, you know, in the last 15 years, no team has been more active in terms of acquisitions and trades than the Patriots. They do a ton on the waiver wire and trading guys and trading draft picks. That's what they do, stockpiling draft picks, looking at free agency, bringing in guys. They brought in, you know, James Harrison this year. So an undrafted free agents as well, which is something Philadelphia did a really good job with, bringing in undrafted free agents. So that's another lesson to learn. Can't just rely on the draft, can't just rely on trades, can't just rely on free agency. It's got to be a collage. It's got to be, kind of a multi-pronged effort to acquire talent. And something else that happened in that Super Bowl we got to recognize, and we talked about it all last week. Philadelphia is the true, I'm trying to think if there's been a more hybridized offense that's won the Super Bowl using a lot of college concepts and spread concepts from the college game. I don't think there has been. So this is the first offense that has used a ton of RPOs and run pass options and a ton of the spread air raid concepts that has really been able to win a Super Bowl. And even the Patriots use some of those concepts too. But the Philadelphia offense they use 3 times as many run pass options as every other team. I mean, they didn't stop there with Nick Foles either. So I think it is a changing of the guard in terms of the philosophy and the mentality. This year was the year of the run-pass option. But I think all of those concepts are now considered commonplace when they were considered, experimental a few years ago. They are no longer that. I mean, Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl with those same concepts that he learned as an offensive coordinator with Andy Reid there in Kansas City, which was one of the think tanks that were able to fuse some of those college concepts with the pro game. So that's something else. I think it's another lesson that you learn from this past Super Bowl and from the Eagles Super Bowl victory. But something else that I didn't get into, and I want to jump into it just while we got some time. The Super Bowl commercials are always a big thing. And I mean, that's my girlfriend's big on watching the Super Bowl commercials. Usually when I watch football, I watch it with a buffer so I can fast forward through the commercials. Boom, no problem. Don't want to watch them. Super Bowl is different. That's why advertisers love the Super Bowl, and they pay millions of dollars just for 30 seconds. All right, tons of it. So you're supposed to get the best of the best in terms of the creative, the creative ideas and the really, really cool, like, you know, commercials, and they're really kind of outside the box thinking, like the best of the best. And I don't want to be a grumpy old man, so I'll ask Ray, because I'm sure Ray got a chance to watch these commercials. What did you think of the commercials? What was your favorite commercial?
I wasn't impressed, honestly. I wasn't really impressed. And the only one that actually stood out to me that I can honestly really remember is the Kia commercial where they had the people come out from behind the scenes.
Yeah,
because it was like every time you buy a Kia, it helps somebody with cancer.
Yeah,
the people were thanking them.
I do remember this.
That's the only one that I remember just because it was so heartfelt. And I thought it was just a great thing. I had no idea Kia did that stuff for cancer victims. And I don't really remember any others. There wasn't really anything too memorable. I remember the Budweiser and the water one.
The Budweiser water one was good for the Harvey relief. That was really cool.
Yeah.
You're right. I remember the Odell Beckham Jr. and Eli Manning one.
I missed that one. I missed that one.
Oh, yeah. That was actually one that I remember. And, you know, I thought it was at least it was outside the box. At least they were creative about it. But I will say this, I'm with you. I thought the commercials were underwhelming.
Yes.
Like, really were. And the key is, I don't even know why they overthink it. The key is just either tug at the heartstrings or put a puppy in the commercial. That's about it. ain't rocket science. They got Morgan Freeman, like, doing lip sync and all this kind of stuff. It's like, no, you're overthinking it. You tug at the heartstrings, which is what Budweiser
Kia.
Did
and Kia
did, right? You tug at the heartstrings, or you do something with a puppy. Like, that's about it. Like, that's in a nutshell. Other than that, you got to be really, really creative. And these days, nobody really knows what's really funny. Like, they don't. They don't. That's why the internet is filled with things that are memes that you don't understand. And you're like, why is that supposed to be funny? Okay, I guess I'll just, you know what I mean? Like, you don't know. But it's a group. Everything's an inside joke these days. So for them to go try to make America get an inside joke on a commercial when you got 30 seconds, it's almost impossible. Don't even go that route. Don't even go, because nobody will remember. Don't go that route. You're probably going to, 50% of the people, even if it is funny, won't think it's funny. You know what I mean? That's how jokes work. So go for the heartstrings. Go for the very sentimental, you know, commercial, or the sentimental connection, whatever it is that you're doing good and you're trying to help humanity. Or put a damn puppy in there and put some kids in there and do something with kids and puppies.
Yeah.
Like, that's about it. Other than that, trying to make it really funny and trying to go this. All the celebrity commercials were terrible.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's just laziness. They're just lazy. They just go, you know what? Let's just get Morgan Freeman or let's get this person. Let's just get Keanu Reeves to do it, and that people will like it. Like, no.
Yeah.
Like, we like celebrities, but, man, we're not going to think that's funny just because you put a celebrity in there to say the word. The Terrell Owens commercial was terrible. You know what I mean? Chris Pratt?
Yep.
The Chris Pratt commercials, terrible.
Yeah.
If you're Michelob, is it Michelob Ultra?
Yeah, Michelob Ultra.
If you're Michelob Ultra and you have a Chris Pratt commercial about Chris Pratt, how do you not bring in the rest of the Chris's? The Chris Hemsworth and the, you know what I mean? They got like three different Chris's out there that you could bring in. Why don't you bring in the rest of those Chris's and make that a commercial? Like, if you're going to be celebrity, go all out. But I don't know. It just didn't. I don't think they did a good job of the commercials. I thought they were lazy this year. You know what I mean? And yep. I think it's getting worse and worse every year, pretty much.
I think so too. I think people are buckling under the pressure.
Yeah, I think they're getting worse every year
for the Super Bowl.
You know what I mean? And you know, every now and then, I'm sure they knock one out of the park. But yeah, they're getting worse every year overall.
There were a few Toyota commercials in there too. That each time, I wasn't sure if it was the same commercial or if it was just similar from the last one from the break before. But there was a few Toyota commercials in there that I thought, like, man, these are really bad.
Man, they were terrible. Yeah. And some people didn't like the Martin Luther King commercial. I think it was like, what was it? It was like Ram or something, I believe. It's like Martin Luther King speech over it. People didn't like that. They were uncomfortable with it. It's like, yeah. Well, when you're having a Martin Luther King speech and it's not, and you're not like, it's not something about like helping humanity and charitable deeds and philanthropy, and it's just about a truck. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, they should have, but they would have made the Harvey connection with the MLK speech in the truck. Then I think people would have been like, oh, it's cool.
There you go.
But they didn't do. I don't think they did that. I don't know. I think people are they're overreaching with the commercials either way. All right, Super Bowl halftime show. Justin Timberlake. I actually thought he did a good job, but I don't like live music shows. So everything I say, you got to take with a grain of salt. I thought he actually did a good job, but essentially, it was a video. And not a performance. He basically was filming a video, and we got a chance to get the backstage pass to him filming a video. Like, to me, it wasn't so much of him like an old school performance as it was of him making it interactive, like with all the different ways that they viewed it and they filmed it. He got on stage at one point, then he went up in the stands and started out like behind the scenes, like SNL would do it. It was new age. And for me, I don't go to a lot of performance, so I don't know if that's the norm. But it was new age, and I don't think a lot of people got that he was trying to basically perform on many different platforms.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what I mean? Like, it was made for social media and for streaming and that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Like, you could have watched that whole damn thing on a television screen and not been there and got the same experience, if not better.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
When it first started and it had him, inside the tunnel in that small stage, I was just like, is this it? He's not going to go outside in the field? Like, he's not going to even perform in the field.
Exactly.
What is this?
Yeah, it was like a video. Then he went outside in the field. And that was pretty cool, too. Listen, he's really talented. I thought he did a good job, but some people didn't like it. They said there were audio issues. I thought he did a good job. I don't know if I would compare it to maybe Lady Gaga did a better job. But she was more of a performance artist. And he's just more of an artist. Like, he can sing.
Trying to get the
dance.
Party going.
Yeah, and she focuses on the performance. He's all about the party, which is why he's moving around. He didn't do that much singing until the end. Like,
no.
And it was like, most of the time he was just reciting the chorus, and then they were having a kind of a mashup of the songs, and he's dancing, and he's a great dancer. But you didn't really hear him sing toward the end. But it was, like I said, I thought it was good. I was entertained.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And I thought it was good as well. And I'm a Justin Timberlake fan, so I like it when he plays I like it when he plays some of the older songs and stuff like that.
With the old
which was cool
stuff.
For me. And I really liked the Prince tribute. I really love that.
Some people didn't like the Prince tribute.
I loved it. I loved it, especially in Minnesota, like in Minneapolis. Like, I thought it was great. I thought it fit in perfectly. And he's a huge Prince fan, so I felt like if anybody was going to do a great tribute, it would be him because he studies Prince. It's like one of his people he likes to look up to.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So I thought that was cool as well. I didn't like the choreography of his. I felt like
really.
Yeah, I think he's getting a little old, man. It felt a little forced. It felt like it wasn't as smooth. It wasn't smooth choreography. I felt like I don't know if it's because he's getting old or what. He's not able to keep up with the moves anymore. But I felt like it was a little hard for him.
Dude, you are a harsh critic. Nobody criticizes Justin Timberlake's dance moves.
I never have before.
I criticize any other thing, but then, man, the dance moves. All right, Ray. Ray, you go to a lot of shows, though. You go to a lot of concerts. That's your thing.
Yeah.
You got backstage passes and stuff like that, so I'll take your word for it. Yeah, but I thought overall he did a good job. I mean, it's hard to do the Super Bowl halftime show and please everybody, so I thought it was good. I'm just not a big fan of Timberlake period and live shows, but I was entertained. All right, we'll come back. We'll get into a little crosstalk. Also talk some more Super Bowl, wrap it up, put it in the oven, all that and more right here on the broadcast. This is the Horn 104.9 and AM 1260. All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Time for a little crosstalk with my man Chad Hastings, who accurately and, well, begrudgingly, accurately and begrudgingly, pick the Eagles to win the Super Bowl. As a Cowboys fan, you got to deal with that today.
That's right.
I said it shouldn't be a positive thing for Cowboys fans that you see your division rival that basically turned it around from being a joke and a laughing stock of the NFL under Chip Kelly to winning a Super Bowl in 2 years? Shouldn't that give you hope?
No. No. Sure. Okay. I mean, in kind of a happy little world that we don't all live in as sports fans, maybe. I heard you talking about some of that earlier. The issue is when you were talking about building the foundation and going coach and going quarterback, the Cowboys only have one of those two, and I just think they're fooling themselves on the other one. So the thing is, as a Cowboys fan, I was skeptical about the Peterson hire at first and was proven wrong. I underestimated the Alshon Jeffrey move. I knew he was good, didn't quite know he'd be this good, but I did not underestimate the Wentz thing because I fell in love with him at the combine, and I thought, you know what, I think this is going to work. And as soon as they picked him, I just had a bad feeling of, ooh, this is going to be tough. But the thing is, this is like that Bob Stoops thing in college football and so many other things we've seen. When you can do it in your first 2 years, you just freak everybody else out.
You do.
It's not realistic to say, well, okay, coach, you got to go win a Super Bowl in your second year. It's not realistic, but it will cause everybody else to flip out. And that average amount of time to be a coach in the NFL, which is, what, 3-point-something years?
Yeah, under four.
It's not getting higher now.
Yeah.
That'll make it stay the same or go lower, because so many owners will look at that and say, well, where's ours?
That's exactly right. And I totally agree with you there, too. And you brought up the acquisitions by the Philadelphia Eagles. I find it, honestly, it's puzzling to me. They went all in so many times in the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. Moving up to get Carson Wentz was an all-in type move. I brought up how much money they paid Nick Foles. They paid Nick Foles $7 million. They wasted $5 million on Chase Daniel because they wanted Nick Foles there, who they call their other starting quarterback. People said, that's the dumbest move for a salary cap league you could ever make, paying your backup that much. That's what won them the Super Bowl.
Right.
And you brought up the free agency moves they made with Alshon Jeffrey, and they traded for Jay Ajayi.
Yeah, say the Ajayi move
Sam
this year.
Bradford move. So many moves.
LeGarrette Blount.
They seem so confident in these moves they made.
Silly, man.
Right? So if you're looking at it from the outside and as a Cowboys fan, do you feel that, hey, if you just become more aggressive, that it'll pay off? Because the Cowboys, I always said, they don't use a lot of they don't trade a lot to get talent, and the free agency market is kind of 50-50 for them. They depend mostly on the draft. Philadelphia, they use the draft.
Right.
They trade to get talent, and they use free agency. They use every avenue possible to acquire talent.
Yeah, you're right. Peterson's definitely not scared, whether it's in-game or out-of-game. If you're an Eagles fan, you love that. With the Cowboys, it's all about – it's obviously about making the right moves, but it's also it's a complex issue of, is Jerry the right guy to make the decisions? He's made some weird ones. He's made some good ones,
but he's made some
strange moves as well. If I'm a Cowboys fan, I don't watch Super Bowl 52 and think, man – we got to make sure we have a backup quarterback, because what if something happens to Dak? No. You watch that game and think, all that other stuff that's around Nick Foles, that's what the Cowboys need. The Cowboys need the substance around Nick Foles that allowed him to do that. The Cowboys don't have that kind of substance on defense. They don't.
They started there. DeMarcus Lawrence and David Irving are a start to having that kind of pass rush.
Yeah, they've got some of those
and
parts.
And the O-line, of course, we know they've invested a lot.
But right now they've got a linebacker on their team that if he plays, you're a damn good defense. If he doesn't, you're lost in the woods.
And that's not the Philadelphia
Eagles.
That's
not what the Eagles
are.
They're
the deepest team, arguably, in the history of any Super Bowl, considering they lost their starting left tackle, starting inside linebacker. They lost their starting most versatile offensive weapon in Darren Sproles, starting quarterback.
Lost the kicker at some point, didn't they?
Lost the kicker and their special teams ace.
Go to a rookie kicker, and it worked.
And it worked.
The rookie kicker had a 61-yarder this year to win a game and looked cool as a cucumber nailing the field goals yesterday, although it was a weird kicking day.
It was a weird kicking day.
At the Super Bowl.
Very strange for a Belichick team to miss a field goal and extra points.
I blame the logo. Those logos on the 25-yard line,
they
were really big.
They were strange.
And on that, I think there was something going on with them.
Interesting.
Something freaked everybody out.
Oh.
You know? Because every time those kicks, whether it was
maybe like painted with something weird or something.
I think something made it with that logo, man.
Okay, dude, that's actually a good theory. That's why I brought that up. Okay, your thoughts on the commercials for the Super Bowl? That's always a big thing. It's the ultimate watch party. It's the game, then the commercials, then the halftime show. Or in that order.
I got a group that I'm going to mention at 350 in the crap bag, but I'll throw two out. I thought the Keegan Michael Key commercial for Rocket Mortgage was solid.
Okay,
because I think he's funny. I thought that was a good idea.
Yeah.
And then the idea of setting up that Eli OBJ thing for that long, and it's still being one people remember, I just got to give them love for it. Because it was a bunch of confusing commercials.
It was, yes.
And it's like, what are you building to? The fact that they knew we'd all be watching of them is bold, and I got to give them credit. OBJ with that.
Great point.
They mimicked that movie. If you know Dirty Dancing.
He got it.
When they when they went in on OBJ's face and he gave her smile.
In the music cues, you go,
music,
oh, these guys, are they going to do it? Yeah.
It really worked. I mean, somehow that one worked.
And it was cheesy, but you're right, nostalgia. Everybody remembers the movie. Yeah. Everybody remembers the moment, so you're right. Also, props to the my man Ray brought this up. The Tide commercials were also like that. Lead up, and they were continuous. You know, the Tide.
Going back to it.
Yeah. And interruption commercials. So,
it wasn't bad.
Justin Timberlake? Like it, love it, hate it?
I thought he was fine. Everybody flips out on the Super Bowl halftime, but I thought he did a good job. I thought some of the effects were good. It kind of reminded me of the Katy Perry performance where they're going to go for visuals. Justin Timberlake wants to give you a show for your eyes as well as your ears.
Yeah.
If you went into that thinking you were seeing Frank Sinatra, well, that's your fault.
Yeah.
If you went into that thinking he was Bruno Mars, he's not.
He's not.
Kind of along the lines of where Bruno ends up. But for somebody to go, well, we needed Bruno over him. Well, Bruno's a pretty big deal when he gets out there. And
Bruno just did it.
And goes after that. Right.
Yeah.
So, Bruno did a great job. I would say Justin did a good job. I thought it was a good, solid effort.
Yeah. No, yeah. I agree with you. Bruno killed it when he did it, too. All right. Listen up, my man Chad and Kevin coming up next. So don't go anywhere. I want to thank my man Ray for doing a great job, as always. Thank you guys for joining us. Remember, the revolution will not be televised. We'll be talking about it right here on the broadcast. Everybody had a great evening. Love you guys. Peace.
Hope you're ready for the next episode. Hey.